Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome to the broadcast, everybody. Good to have you be with us. Special welcome goes out to those of you listening for the first time. It's an honor to have you be a part of us, our broadcast. You know that you're now a part of a broadcast that is reaching over 136,000 mortgage professionals. That's how many have downloaded this broadcast in the last 6 months, and it's growing. We're averaging 25,000 to 30,000 listeners and downloads each week on the broadcast. It's amazing to see the success, and it's because of you, our listeners. You're telling others about it, and it's really working. Today, we've got a special guest on the Hot Topic segment. David Stevens, the president of the Mortgage Bankers Association of America, is going to be with us. He is on the line, on hold, listening to the broadcast. We're so thrilled to have him. Very excited to hear his comments as we interview David about his thoughts on leadership and what you, the listeners, can do to make a difference by getting involved. Man, this been a horrific weekend for us emotionally as we sit and look and our hearts turn towards Newtown, Connecticut. Horrific tragedy that took place there this past Friday. I'm sure most of you have been impacted as we have. I don't know about you, but I find myself at times just overwhelmed with emotions as I sit and think and meditate about those precious, innocent young lives that were sadly snuffed out. Amazing also, it's the stories that are coming out about teachers who locked kids in a cabinet and then took bullets and died protecting those children. What amazing stories. So in the midst of a season of faith, hope, love, and joy, we are sadly reminded about just how much of a troubled world we live. As each of us deal with this tragedy in our own ways and our own thoughts, and our prayers go out to the families that have suffered such an unthinkable loss. We go on with life. And we go on with the broadcast. Switching gears, we want to say a special thank you goes out to Alamode and United Guarantee, both new sponsors to the broadcast. Last week, we dedicated the program to talked about the encouraging turnaround story published this month's Mortgage Banking Magazine about United Guarantee's amazing turnaround and the leadership that was involved. If you did not catch that broadcast, go back and download it and listen to it. I know it'll be very, very interesting. We want to say a special thank you to the United Guarantee to becoming the newest sponsor to the broadcast. Also, there was an article published in the Mortgage Banking Magazine. We always refer to that. Is that one of the leading, Janet Hewitt, does an outstanding job bringing right articles at the right time. And if you know the lead time, it's just amazing the fact that she can get that done. But there was a Mortgage Banking article out published by our other sponsor, Alamode, also Mercury Network, it was called Dodd-Frank, the Appraisal Compliance Strategy. Our sponsor, Alamode and Mercury Network, contributed significantly to this article, and it really helps give you guidance on how to make sure your appraisal operations are in compliance. Keep in mind the violations for the appraisal provisions of Dodd-Frank can run just a little bit expensive. I'll try about $10,000 per day per violation. And for those of you doing a few appraisals, that could get really expensive. So it's serious stuff. This article lays out how you can stay in compliance and avoid the huge financial penalties. You can download that article by going to the Mortgage Banking Magazine, www.mortgagebanking.com, and download it there. I think you can get assets. That's right. You have to subscribe. So go to www.mortgagebanking.com, mortgagebankingmagazine.com, subscribe.htm, and you'll get subscribed. Also, Mercury Network has, with permission from Mortgage Banking Magazine, has made the article available on their website, www.mercurybmp.com/DFA, standing for Dodd-Frank Act. So we appreciate our sponsors. Good to have them be a part of it and part of our broadcast each and every week, getting us off to a good start. Hopefully off to a good start. Is Joe Favre with the MBS Quote Line. What do you have for us today, Joe? Hey, what are the markets doing?
Well, the MBS markets are down a little bit, just a couple 30 seconds on the day, but the stock market's up, and they're up 80 points, and it seems to be that there's an improved perception of a deal. to avoid the fiscal cliff. Over the weekend, you know, the president and Boehner had a meeting, and that was followed up with a meeting this morning. So the likelihood of a deal seems to be a little bit more positive.
Urging.
We'll wait and see. So far today, economic news has been fairly insignificant. The Treasury 2-year Treasury auction was just concluded, and I think it was about an average auction. New York Empire Index was weaker than expected, but it's not a big market moving event. But last week, let's talk about not much moved the market last week until the Fed meeting. That's always a significant event, but this one more so than most. The Fed announced two new things last week, David. One was highly expected, and that was that they were going to replace Operation Twist, which was a buy and a sell of Treasury securities of equal amounts to just be the buy side. They're going to add $45 billion a month in new longer-term Treasury instruments. Now, this is on top of the $40 billion that they're doing in the MBS market, and I guess it's even more than that when they're also continuing to buy new to replace runoff. So,
right.
The Fed is a big buyer in both the markets now, and is having an influence. Although surprising that the reaction in the Treasury market, and I guess it wasn't terribly surprising given it was expected, but the reaction in the Treasury market has been to cause yields to go higher ever since the Fed meeting. The second thing they did was they announced the guidelines upon which they would consider no longer providing easy monetary policy, and they set that based on an unemployment rate of 6.5% and inflation being under control.
Yeah, you had reported those were possible percentages earlier.
Right, and when they came out with those things, David, it either caused a little confusion. I think in the bottom line, it caused investors to have a greater concern for where inflation is going to go. And that's part of the reason that the yields have drifted higher ever since the Fed meeting. So that was pretty much the driver last week. This week, there's a number of economic events, none of them terribly significant. Housing data on Wednesday and Thursday, durable orders and CPE on Friday. Treasury auctions, as I mentioned, one today, one tomorrow, and one Wednesday. But the driver, again, is going to be whether or not we get to a solution or we're perceived as getting closer to a solution on the fiscal cliff. And when that happens, I would anticipate that stock market will like that, and bonds will probably move a little lower.
I would suspect that would be
in
the case.
Price, not rate.
Yeah, price, absolutely. Yeah, it'll be interesting. This, you know, all eyes are on the fiscal cliff, and our good friend Les Parker says that he says the thing that more has to do with drama than it is anything else, but it's going to be interesting. Certainly, we're focused on it, and so are the markets. Joe, thank you so much for bringing this update for us. For those of you that are not using MBS Quote Line, you should be. Stay tuned. Here's how you can learn how to get signed up.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS Quote Line delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect. And know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS Quote Line, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS Quote Line today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lickin' on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Good to have you back with us. You know, we talk about the girl next door, where we talk about the trainer next door. Alice Alvey with the Legislative Update. President of Mortgage U is with us on the line, coming to you live from Detroit, Michigan. I assume you're up in Detroit, are you not, Alice?
Yes, I get to be home today. I'm very happy.
Very happy. I'm sure your husband's happy about that.
Yes, absolutely.
That's very good. Well, what do you have for us today, November 12th?
Well, you know, obviously.
I want to talk about this.
Oh, my God. Right. What day is today? Right.
I looked at the screen. It had that up there, you know.
Well, we actually have right now, obviously, the fiscal cliff is the big focus. The two mortgage components that kind of float around in that are whether or not they're going to go after the mortgage interest deduction and whether we're going to get any extension of the debt forgiveness, you know, the tax relief with the IRS if you have any part of your mortgage balance forgiven. So those are the two components we're watching to see if those get slid in or out anywhere in these final weeks as those negotiations go on. But so far, obviously, all that's just a coin toss right now. The main thing I want to make sure everybody is aware of is FHA's anti-property flipping rule, which has been around for many years now, and there's been a waiver in place where there are some exceptions where if the seller has not owned the property for 90 days, that you still may be able to have that seller, have that transaction go FHA. And this is a big part of the market. FHA has always been very good at seeing themselves as trying to make sure they fill that void in some markets. And so there is an extension. The extension was granted for that anti-property flipping waiver for the 90-day rule until 2014.
Good.
Now, a lot of companies still won't follow that to the letter of the law. You know, they're still very concerned about property being in the first mortgage in after a property flip, and you know, because a lot can go wrong, and they want to make so. Please check your lender guidelines. Not everybody follows that to the letter that FHA offers it. Which brings me to my point about risk analysis in general with FHA. I am so anxious to talk to Dave Stevens about. You know, I know the MBA is working hard and working with FHA because I do sit on the FHA subcommittee there at the MBA. So there's plenty to talk about on that front, but it's a heads up for lenders right now with risk management. Now's the time, while we have a little compliance law at the end of the year here, to please make sure you take a look at your risk management practices on what are you accepting within your FHA loans in particular and your refer guidelines. If you have any questions, give us a call. We're happy to help. But we're seeing lenders make a lot of changes, become a lot more conservative on their FHA streamlined refis in particular. Last but not least, I want to give you the update. You know, the CFPB has the consumer complaint website. Their first report that came out over the summer was that they've had over 43,000 complaints. Thank goodness the front-end mortgage process wasn't too much of a focus there. The lion's share of the mortgage complaints were on the servicing side. But just want to give you a heads up. You know, they are sharing these consumer complaints with the state regulators. And so they're going to get kind of the background of who's complaining, which customers are complaining. There's definitely a process with CFPB where you get the chance to respond. The customer then responds to your response, and it goes back and forth until both parties are, obviously the customer in this case, is happy. So be aware that that information is going to be getting shared with your state regulators, so you do want to make sure your customers are happy and get familiar with that CFPB consumer complaint website. So I am going to pass that back to you, Dave, so that we can get plenty of time with Dave Stevens.
I know. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, I like that one thing about CFPB sharing the data there. And here's the words, and it's in quotes, deputizing the state and local agencies. I don't know why I get nervous about the word deputizing, but as if we don't have enough scrutiny, it makes you just a little bit nervous. Thank you so much, Alice. Appreciate you bringing to the broadcast an update on all the things going on legislatively there in D.C. and around the country. Appreciate it very much. Folks, you want to stay tuned for this brief word. We'll be right back. Remember, we've got David Stevens as our guest in just a little bit on the Hot Topics segment. We'll be right back after this brief word.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals providing classroom and web-based delivery and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lincoln on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us. We've started a new segment, Under the Radar. Here it is, pre-recorded from our good friend Bill Coppedge. Now for the newest segment here on Lickin' on Lending, the Under the Radar segment with Bill Coppedge. Bill is Senior Managing Director of Fay Servicing in Chicago and the force behind the widely read industry blog MortgageNewsClips.com, which showcases important news articles and stories that you might otherwise miss, which is the reason we gave it the name Under the Radar. This blog is a great resource for every mortgage professional. Bill, what do you have for us today?
Hi, Dave. First up is a blog post that I put up on Saturday titled QE4 Scares the Heck Out of Me. There are 7 posts in it. If you want to understand quantitative easing and what it means, it's worth taking some time to scan these articles. When you consider that half of the $85 billion being spent each month by the Fed is spent buying mortgage-backed securities to artificially support the housing market, you realize how dangerous it will be when this buying stops. The Chinese and Japanese have stopped buying our U.S. Treasury debt. Now the Fed buys the bulk of U.S. Treasury debt because there are not enough other buyers. In effect, a government-sanctioned reserve bank is buying the debt of the government's treasury. One hand of government washes the other, providing an artificial sense of stability. Next, let's talk about the state of the housing market. I was able to find 9 different stories in the past week that indicated housing prices are on the mend. CNN Money reports that there is a housing recovery going on, but it's very, very slow. CoreLogic reports that housing prices rose 6.3% in the last year. Professor Mark Perry has a site that always shows great economic charts. His latest post shows a nice turnaround in housing prices. Home prices in South Florida are rising. HousingWire references a Credit Suisse research report pointing out to higher home prices in 2013. Fox Business News reports that wealthy Chinese buyers, particularly on the West Coast, are paying all cash for very expensive homes. The M report notes that the number of improving housing markets rose from 76 in November to 201 in December. This is a huge move. Finally, I have 4 odds and ends for you from the past week. First, HousingWire mentions a research piece predicting that G fees will rise 30 to 50 basis points in 2013. That's a lot. MarketWatch has a link to a foreclosure timeline state by state. You can go to this link, bring up the page, and it will show you the actual number of days for every single state that it takes to foreclose. Next, let's talk about Japanese mortgage rates. Do you know how low interest rates are for a mortgage in Japan? Patrick.net shows Japanese 30-year fixed-rate mortgages are at 2.1%. If the Federal Reserve continues their zero interest rate policy and quantitative easing, it is quite possible that we will have 30-year fixed rate mortgage rates soon with a 2% handle in the United States. HousingWire also has an article about how more Americans are confident that they will be around to get a mortgage in the future. This is another sign of things turning around. Dave, I always appreciate the opportunity to be able to share mortgage news with you and all the other listeners on Lincoln and on Lending. I'll see you next week.
Listeners, did you hear that? Bill says that we could see mortgage rates with a 2% handle, in other words, in a 2% range sometime soon, which is in 2013. Anyway, if you want to read all of the items in more detail and also click on the links to the news stories that you just heard about, go to www.mortgagenewsclips.com/week3. Again, that is www.mortgagenewsclips.com/week3. Also, check out Fay Servicing's latest press release there. Thank you again, Bill. Appreciate it. And look forward to having your report next week. Let's turn to Andy Schell and get some analysis on this. Andy Schell, it's good to have you back up there. But you're not here in Austin. You're stuck way up there in the north of Alice. Is it snowy up there?
I am.
You're so far north that, you know, do you see Santa Claus?
Well, just about. I can see Russia from my backyard.
Wait a minute.
I can see Alice's backyard. Yeah. I'm in Grand Rapids, Michigan, with an amazing organization, a company we've had the privilege of being associated with for years now, North Point Bank, working with their warehouse line lending group. They're a great group of people, a great product. Encourage people, check them out. See if you can let them support your business, too.
What do you think about some of the comments that Bill made? And then I always like to get whatever pearls of wisdom you have for us, Prophet Doctor.
Well, you know, I think the idea about a two-point mortgage is certainly an interesting idea. And, you know, when the 5 handle hit, I thought, great time to put on MSRs. And then it was 4, and I thought, great time to put on MSRs. And then it was 3. And You know, we're putting MSRs on the books now and buying them and have IRRs in the 30s in some cases. And so buying servicing, retaining servicing has been a great thing, especially at these coupons. But when you go down a whole other point again, then all of a sudden we've got prepayment speeds kicking back in. So great for origination, maybe not so great for servicing. It's one of those things you just got to keep watching.
How low can it go? That's for sure.
And as soon as they pay me to borrow money, then I'll get some more.
You're going to go get some more. Yeah, I've got all I want of it right now, even at these lower rates. That's good. That's good. Appreciate it, Andy. Appreciate you being with us. And I know you know we're going to get a plug for CMB. You're a big CMB advocate, and you're always beating me up on getting my CMB. And so I know you're going to be having a lot to say when we get David on here in a few moments. Anything else you have for us, or should we go? Go ahead.
Well, just one quick point. First off is that, don't forget, we've got everybody with initials. Joe's CPA, I'm CPA, and CMB, and Alice is, remember this, Master CMB.
Yes, we always refer to
it. Master CMB. So everybody should strive to be a Master CMB. Well, one of the things, just a quick side note, Dave, is that here working with the folks at the bank, they've got a great dashboard tool. And it makes me think about mortgage companies and managing their bottom line. And a lot of mortgage companies still try to shoot from the hip and swing for the fence, and it almost always leads to disaster. Margins are bigger now because of the changes that are happening, but we've got to save up our nuts. We've got to be squirrels and save for the winter because the CFPB audits are coming. We've got to be careful about this. We've got to forecast our expenses, and we need to have better tools for really watching what we've done. We need to have a 90-day cash flow forecast, a 12-month volume forecast driving bottom line, what we think we're going to get, and then most importantly, the KPIs, the key performance indicators. We need to forecast our net income on funding volume and really get a better sense for our cost, allocating our cost out accordingly. So it's just, it needs to go into an organization that's well-managed and has really good, well-implemented dashboards.
Yeah.
And every company in the country, as mortgage banking continues to evolve, if you're going to survive, you need to look at those that are successful and see what they do. And one of the things successful companies do, I can assure you, every Fortune 500 company has a cash flow forecast, a financial forecast, strong budgeting and controls, and KPI reporting dashboards. They all do. It's important for every successful company, every company that wants to be successful, to do the same thing. So I encourage mortgage companies to pursue that too.
That is good. Good encouragement. Good reminder. Okay. Profit Doctor, appreciate it. Folks, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break with David Stevens, president of the Mortgage Bankers Association of America.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success,
Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you with us, all of you listeners. Appreciate it. One of the things we do in this part of the broadcast, we do the Hot Topic segment. We either pick a topic that's going on, it's hot, and we discuss it amongst ourselves, Joe, Alice, Andy, and I, or we go out and very frequently get some of the industry's top leaders as guests. Today, we are very fortunate to have David Stevens, the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Dave has over 30 years as an executive in almost every phase of lending. He started his professional career with a good friend of mine at World Savings, and later became Senior Vice President at Freddie Mac, EVP at Executive Vice President at Wells Fargo. He was the President and Chief Operating Officer of Long and Foster Companies, the nation's largest privately held real estate firm. Immediately prior to joining the MBA, as many of you know, David was the Assistant Secretary for Housing and the Federal Housing Commissioner at HUD. His role head the responsibility of oversight administration for FHA and the FHA insurance portfolio. David is a frequently quoted in national media on issues affecting mortgage and housing. He serves as the director of the MBA Open Doors Foundation, the MBA's national 501c3 nonprofit organization for philanthropic ventures. I want to hear more about that, especially as we get to the season of giving. Also currently serves, David also currently serves on the Hope Loan Port Board of Directors. David is a graduate of Colorado, University of Colorado, there in Boulder, one of my favorite places to go through because I'm always going skiing when I'm going through Boulder when I used to live out there in the West Coast. Good to have David. And, oh, by the way, he is married, and his wife, Mary, who had the privilege of meeting at the, in Chicago at the Doobies Brothers Conference, as well as four daughters, our children, and all in the Washington, D.C. area. And it's good to have you on the broadcast, David. Appreciate you being here.
Good to be here, David. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, it's a real honor. And one of the things we talk about family, especially with all that went on in Newtown, we just really appreciate your commitment to family. And it's so obvious, David, you and I are Facebook friends, and we're always I'm reading your posts as I scan through the broadcast. And it's so obvious you're a family man. And I just celebrate that. And also, it's so much fun to find a couple that is in love. You and Mary just look like, I mean, you, first of all, you look, both of you look just fabulous. And I refer to the Ken and Barbie camp. Well, I hope that doesn't embarrass you, but you're both just so attractive and so good. But so really, but it's a genuineness between the two of you, David. And I want to acknowledge that. For those of you that have not had a chance to get to know Mary and get to know the whole family, this is really one of the reasons I'm attracted to this individual. Not only that, the leadership he has brought. And David, you have brought so much leadership to an industry that has just been desperately needing it. I want to get some of your perspective on your and your journey and your thoughts on leadership, David. What got you here?
Like a lot of us, came from here from sort of similar roots. I was looking at Alice's background, and you know, she touts her extensive experience in the industry, having worn a lot of hats. I started, like many who listen to your show, I started as a loan rep in Colorado.
Wow.
Back when rates were in the very high teens, and you know, just through experience, had the opportunity to excel and run branches and regions and national platforms, and get recruited, and you know, as you read through my history, run a big secondary marketing operation and senior roles, and ultimately sit at the head of the FHA and now at the MBA. But you know, I think as I look back and I look at those around me who succeed, I think part of this is about seeing a vision, a direction for where you think the industry is going, and then executing against that vision, and then taking risks. And I think all of those things are, have to be part of sort of the theme of providing that direction that hopefully you can bring others along with you on.
Well, taking risk is a great, great point. And we're doing a series of broadcasts on leadership and making a difference. And I just really value what your perspective is on leadership. And you know, when you look at what makes a great leader, one of the things you just talked about is taking risks. What would you say to someone that doesn't see themselves as a leader? I mean, we need more leaders, would you say?
Yeah, well, leadership is a void. I mean, look, you're talking to a guy who sits in Washington, D.C. and has been up on the Hill for the last week working on a variety of things from FHA to the fiscal cliff, and leadership is something that we're all looking at Washington to provide. You know, it's probably the single biggest void we have today in America, right. And there's a lot of books written about leadership, but it's hard to find really great leaders.
Did you always see yourself as a leader, David?
Of course not. None of us do. Probably we all start off in roles, and you know, I am comfortable with change, and I looked forward to every opportunity to excel, and I took jobs when it actually paid me less to get greater experience, and I relocated a dozen times from my first bank that I worked for around the country, opening up offices, when others took the safer route. And you know, I think in the end of the day, we all experience it in our own ways, but it's about, you know, it's about creativity, it's about vision, it's about execution, it's about diversity, making sure you have the right team around you.
Looking always
for the opportunity, and never taking challenge as a reason to as an excuse for failure. And that, I think that's, you know, we've all have those mentors in our lives, and I had mine, and hopefully I'm providing some role in providing leadership today.
Oh, you are. There's no question that you are, David. And we're just we saw that you were looked like you were going and leaving for a while, and the news was so well received when you came back, and we heard that you're staying on, and so we really appreciate that. Let's shift the focus over to MBA and what they're doing, what you're specifically doing to lead in this industry right now to make a difference. What are the things you're specifically doing? What is the MBA specifically doing?
Look, the MBA is around two essential themes. One is that the big tent, speaking with one voice as an industry. And I've never seen, when I was in the administration and I worked on the president's housing team, whenever we were working on policy, it was really easy to talk to the realtors. NAR came in, one big group. You always knew they were, when they spoke, it represented at least the conclusive thought of the whole real estate industry. Same for the home builders. The challenge with the mortgage industry is there was a lot of infighting going on in the industry itself, big versus small, bank versus non-bank, splinter groups being created. And, you know, I remember the first day I came over to the MBA, I got a call from an old friend in the White House, and he said, I need your opinion on a policy, but can you guys please come back with one view? You just don't have time to deal with the separate views, and it makes us look childish. And we all end up being marginalized as a result. So, I've created a strategic plan here, and it's to focus on recognition that we have we're far better served as an industry when all institutions of size, shape, bank, non-bank, retail direct, or third party, that we all get to compete in an environment where rules are not created that unfairly prejudice against one kind of institution or the other. And if we can do so, and if we can do the hard work at the MBA, we will have a far greater voice. And so, you know, since I've come here, we've added over 600 new members.
Wow.
All of them are small, small independent mortgage bankers. We've created the first independent mortgage banking conference, bankers conference. The MBA never did one before. We just experienced ours in Texas in November. It was a huge success. In fact, double the registrations over what we had expected. You know, that's step one. And if I could just quickly say, the other side of this is leadership, as you discussed, leading on policy initiatives. Whether it's creating a level playing field so that companies can recruit loan officers without having bars at the door because you're supervised or not, everybody should have to pass the same test, whether you're bank owned or non-bank, to get into the game. And I think it's fairness. It's about articulating policies in such a way that the industry can align around them, and we can provide confidence with consumers, with regulators, with policymakers, and ultimately we become the voice of reason rather than a self-centered group representing some segment of this industry. And we've learned that we can really drive policy change in Washington. We've had a lot of impact over the last year.
You know what? And I want to call attention to the Independent Mortgage Banking Conference in Dallas. I was supposed to go there. In fact, you had asked me to come up and speak, and I had to be at another place at the time. That was so well attended. And, David, I've heard so much feedback from that. Many participants said this was one of the first MBA conferences where everybody went in and attended all the sessions. It wasn't like it was a big networking thing where they're out running around the halls and doing all that. People went and attended it without question. That, and along with the servicing conference, the workshop you just had up that I spoke at in Denver, outstanding successes. Alice, you know, David brought you up, so let's get you in on this discussion. And I know you're involved in MORPAC and some of the other things that are going on, Alice. So jump in.
Well, it's interesting, Dave. You've absolutely hit the nail on the head that the association needs to try and pull together everyone. Do you feel like that's really – so I know you had just a conference recently. What are some of the things in 2013 to make sure we all stay aligned? Because it is tough when you look at brokers, the mid- and small-sized lenders, what their needs are, compare that to the big banks. That's a lot of people to try and balance and keep happy.
Hurting.
Well, you know, the good news is that there's actually much more commonality, issues of commonality, than there are differences. We have differences over a handful of issues. The SAFE Act is a classic case of where there are clear differences in view. And, you know, I have a view on that, which is the only answer anybody can have, which is you can't go out to the American public and say, when you sit with any loan officer in this country under the SAFE Act, you can be confident that they've all met the same standard. You can do that with a CMB, But you can't do that with a loan officer licensing process unless everybody has to take the same test. And yeah, I think we have risks when we create rules that disparage business models unfairly, because it creates disproportions in the marketplace and adverse selection. And so,
do you really think the banks will change? Do you think that is possible to get where the banks would have the same rules as lenders?
Well, look, I think the banks are going to resist it, not necessarily because of a competitive advantage, just because it's extra work. But
right.
it is a competitive disadvantage for those of you who are independent mortgage bankers, and you know it because you're in that space. Here's what I think. I think there's a couple of things. In the loan officer compensation proposed rule under Dodd-Frank, it requires those banks that are supervised but not required to take the SAFE Act to ensure that their loan officers are appropriately trained to do their job. And the penalties for violating these rules are extraordinary. And my own sense is there's one solution here that could, say, provide a safe harbor if banks get their loan officers licensed under the SAFE Act, to say that meets that obligation of having your loan officers trained. So there's a voluntary way to do this. It would require a little work with NMLS and CSBS, but you could get there. And the second solution is ultimately to talk to policymakers just about the importance of creating uniform national standards. When you have disparate standards, it creates confusion. People don't understand what rules respective institutions have to comply with. And ultimately, we could end up in an environment that got us here in the first place. And so, you know, this isn't a matter, from my perspective, about fairness to our industry. It's more about how are we going to treat consumers? What promises can we hold to? How do we keep an environment that allows institutions to broadly compete in the marketplace, because more competition is better for our business and for the consumer? And ultimately, I think there's an opportunity through the regulatory process and the legislative process to come up with alternative measures.
We've got two ex-bankers here. Let's go to Andy. I'll let you get your thoughts. And is it possible to get the bankers to come in line? Andy, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, hi, David. Great points. It's fun listening to you describe these issues. And I actually had 3 points I wanted to make and get your thoughts on this. First off, what's funny to me about this is I spoke last week at a whole group of CPAs. All were auditing mortgage companies. I was teaching about hedging and hedge accounting. And one of the things we were talking about was some of the LO comp rules that came up. And we were talking about licensing issues and SAFE Act. And I said, what's really funny about this is that the mortgage originators who aren't able to work for a mortgage company because of either credit or they can't pass the test, go work for the commercial banks.
Right.
So the commercial banks now have the lower crust potentially. And I think that as a commercial bank mortgage lender, you don't want that stigma. You want to be as good as the best. Banks always like to have these big commercials with a big vault door because it shows stability and security, great big granite columns. And yet they're the dumping ground for people who can't qualify to be a mortgage banker.
That's exactly right. I mean, I think, you know, this idea of adverse selection is something we have to be really careful of. I have a file of examples of loan officers who failed the test, couldn't go work for the independent mortgage banker they had applied to, and they went to one of the big brand banks. And, you know, I think the challenge is that some of the banks would say, look, we have a training protocol which is very thorough and very effective and easily subscribes to what loan officers have to go to. And I think the challenge is the fact that we can't guarantee that for all banks across the country. Not all banks meet the same standard of training. And the only thing that we can use to ensure that all consumers, no matter where they take a loan application in this country, with whatever lender they take it with, is if they've passed this thing called the Loan Officer Licensing, the National Mortgage Licensing Standard, both within their state requirement and the federal requirement. So if we can come out with a standardized test that all states subscribe to, that's step one. That's a voluntary measure that we're already getting some headway on. And if we can get an environment that says, look, everybody should take the test, that way we can create greater confidence in the consumer markets and have a safer, sounder industry going forward with continuity and consistency. So if you move from California to D.C. and you go from a bank loan officer to a non-bank loan officer, you know that no matter who you met with, they all had the same training and minimum testing requirements. I think we create a better industry for the future, and this is really the area we got to come from. It's avoid adverse selection that hurts institutions down over the long term, and it's a way to create a measure that our industry can stand behind that says, look, we believe in the integrity of standardized policies, just like servicing standards, loan officer licensing standards should be the same. One last point, Andy, on this one is you know, it's funny, if you want to become a hairdresser in Washington, D.C., the requirements are far greater than if you're going to be a loan officer working for a bank. And so, you know, everybody has to
that line for years.
Everybody has to take a test. Everybody has to pass continuing education. And I think ultimately for the strength of our industry, uniformity provides greater continuity and everybody can understand us better. And that's what helps us avoid what just happened over this last decade, which has created a vacuum, created an era of distrust.
Yeah, exactly. Well, just I know the clock is ticking along. I had two other quick points I wanted to make real quick, if Mr. Licken will allow me.
Go for it.
One other the next point, David, get your thoughts on, is that I think we had on the radio show maybe a month or two ago someone from the Realtor Group, the National Association of Realtors, and when one of the things they were talking about that caught my ear was that, you know, when the realtors come in, not only do they come with a unified voice, there's like 15 million members or something like that. Not literally, but there's a lot. When MBA comes in, one, we have to have a unified voice, and the numbers, even at total, aren't as substantial because it's by company rather than individual, whereas a lot of times it's realtors, it's individuals.
Right.
One thing to think about is, have you given thought to counting or having individual registration membership with the MBA for people?
Well, it's a great question, Andy, and look, my friends, the realtors, obviously I was one of them when I ran a big real estate company. We operate under very different themes, and the advantage that the realtors have is to get to be a licensed real estate agent. You have to be part of the National Association of Realtors. But I would say this, that, you know, when we talk, first of all, we need to get organized under one tent. Separating into different groups means that we're doing exactly what Congress is doing, that if we can't get along, we separate into the Tea Party and the liberal left and whatever our segments are, and we point fingers at each other. And that's not the way to get the work done. We do the hard work here. We're a strong industry. We have deep technical skills. And, you know, the vast majority of our members, by the way, are not the top 10 banks. We have 2,000 institutional members, but we represent over 300,000 employees at the Mortgage Bankers Association as of last count. And I'm not necessarily a big fan of individual memberships. I've seen that attempted at the National Association of Mortgage Brokers, and it's difficult to get loan officers to commit. There's extraordinary turnover in those ranks, and there's no mandate that you have to do this for any reason. But I do think, first and foremost, you know, we need to be organized as one big voice. And nobody, there's a trade group in the country that has 140 employees all housed in Washington, D.C., with PhD economists, lawyers, policy experts, full segment of lobbyists with the budget that we have that can influence Washington. People can hold weekly conference calls. They can send out memos and newsletters. They can't affect the policy change that's bringing such angst and challenge to our industry today unless it's organized under one roof. And so, you know, regardless of the individual corporate structure, I think without the mandate, we keep the corporate structure. I do think the preeminent point is let's get organized together. Let's work out our issues under the big tent, and then let's march to the Hill and fight for rules that will make it end up in such a way that, you know, low-income consumers aren't barred from housing altogether because we just made it too risky to engage in the business.
So good. You know what? Go ahead, Andy.
But you know, even publicizing that point, it's 300,000 individuals. Even that is – I hadn't heard that number in a while, so that's a good point to bring up as well. And the last point, as I wrap up my questions, and I appreciate you letting me continue to ask questions, Mr. Licken, is that, David, you mentioned earlier that part of your career you started and you understood the value of taking risk. And obviously that also means taking measured risk. And in order to take measured risk means – you have to be able to measure things. And one of the things that I hope the MBA can do more and more, I know that we're actually helping on this front as well, but let's help mortgage companies measure their activity. And everybody's focusing on CFPB and Dodd-Frank and LOCOMP, but there's so much more to measuring activity that smaller guys need to do. The big guys do it well, but we just really need to encourage people to measure so they're not taking blind risks, they're not guessing, they're taking measured risks, because that's what leads to success.
Yeah, Andy, I completely agree. There's and this appropriate risk-taking point is critical. The thing that I've always surrounded myself with is the best operations and risk management key people on my team that I could find anywhere, because without really strong controls, you'll get your company in trouble. But to that end, without question, being able to measure and assess your risks in the market and take corrective measures is absolutely of critical importance. I completely subscribe to your point.
Joe Farr.
Well, thank you. Appreciate you taking it.
Joe Farr, I want to get you on talking about some of the forward. We look forward to the future. Joe, I'll turn the mic over to you.
Yeah. Okay, thanks a lot. Dave, there's a lot of change, obviously, in store. Some of it, much of it's going to be announced within the next few weeks. But I wanted to get your thoughts on, what the industry can do to prepare for and how much time are they going to get to implement the Dodd-Frank changes, the QM, QRM,
yep.
If that's going to happen. And then talk a little bit about just the environment as you see the market in 2013.
Yeah, so, Joe, great question. And, as a guy who's worked in the administration in Washington for a couple of years, it was busy then. It's the busiest I've ever seen it right now. So there are two things. There are three dynamics. One is that Congress is now, it's post-election. Congress is actually going to do things rather than pre-election. It was don't do anything because it might help the other side. Now they're actually going to do things, which can be a good thing or a bad thing. So FHA is going to be directly under the microscope in both the House and the Senate. And there's a couple of things going on there right now. Obviously, the House bill is on the Senate side, and there's a question of whether it'll get hotlined, as it's called, into a vote before the break for the holiday, because this is the last chance for this Congress to do anything. I don't think that's highly likely, but I do believe there are going to be some FHA measures that will be voluntarily announced by Sean Donovan and Carol Galante here in the near term. But beyond that, 2013 is going to be the year of implementation. And I say that because we have six major rulemakings alone from CFPB, which are all going to become final in the first quarter. LOCOMP, servicing standards, appraisal standards, high-cost loans, QM, QRM, and even Basel may get a final nod sometime towards the end of the first quarter. Obviously, that's not Dodd-Frank, but that's a separate impact. So here's what I think the good news is. QM, if it isn't done by January 23rd, it goes automatically into implementation. What the final rule will say, which will come out before the end of the second week of January, it'll give the final rule of QM, but it'll also give a fairly lengthy implementation timeline to get the rule into place. The concern I think we all have to have, and where experts like all of you can help, is that the amount of change is still going to be absolutely massive. And so being able to get effective counsel, particularly smaller companies that don't have a lot of in-house infrastructure, is going to be critically important. And QM, again, it'll be the first and most significant rule that the CFPB has put out. It'll be out, I believe, before the 10th or the 11th. And while I think we'll end up with a fairly good rule, it's still going to cause a lot of changes in terms of implementation process and what investors are willing to buy, and you're going to see all of that impact, the industry pretty quickly.
Any thoughts or guidance on what that QM's going to look like?
I do have a lot of thoughts about it. I prefer kind of to hold back on those. Here's what I would say. I think the final rule is going to be significantly better than what everybody had anticipated months ago, and I think it's going to give a broad enough framework for us to continue doing business in the kind of context that we're doing today, Freddie, Fannie, FHA, without having to worry about new debt to income haircuts on the business or other extraordinary measures. So I feel fairly confident, at least the way we're doing business now, that QM will end up in a pretty good spot, and hopefully it'll reflect a collaborative process with this new bureau, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which could have introduced the final rule some time ago, and they actually, as you all know, they stopped it late summer and went out for additional comment, and it's not their fault they were created. That was created by Dodd-Frank, for those of you who don't like the CFPB. But, the fact that they're listening, we'll see by this rule, it could end up being a reflection on the fact that this could be a workable dynamic.
I was going to say, Alice, we always talk about new regulation, legislation. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I'm glad to hear that he feels that we'll get that broad framework. I mean, I'm assuming that means that, you know, if I have a Fannie Freddie approved eligible, I'm not going to have to worry about an overlay of some other DTI. And, you know, it's kind of what I picked up on a little bit, although maybe you can't say yet. So I'm anxious to hear, to see that first round. But we also have the LO comp kind of drop deadline, too,
right,
as well in that first part of January. So, go ahead.
Yeah, the LO comp has a lot of challenges in the proposal. I assume most of you have read it. And, you know, particularly again for small independents that have profit sharing plans, if the vast majority of their business is derived from mortgage banking activities, there's limitations there. This 0-0 proposal requirement is doesn't make a lot of sense in the proposed rule. But we have, I'm cautiously optimistic that we'll end up with an okay rule. A whole bunch of rules at one time is just a problem, no matter how
right.
we look at it. And that's the real challenge, is how much can the industry absorb in a narrow period of time? And particularly if you're a small business and you're just trying to do your day-to-day activities and serve your community and originate loans for your neighbors and friends and in your town, and you're having to absorb all this extraordinary change, what are the best outlets? Who are the best third-party providers? How do I ensure I can do business safely and soundly? And, you know, for all of you, and I'm sure you've talked about this on previous calls, I'm more concerned about things like fair lending and disparate impact claims that could come as a result of creating narrow definitions around product qualifications that ultimately may cause a disparate impact as a result. And if I comply with QM, am I violating a rule that's in HUD around disparate impact? And do I
right.
expose my firm and myself personally to litigation or financial responsibilities that are simply as a result of trying to follow two sets of rules that disagree with each other?
Dave, yeah, that was going to be one of my questions for you was, is anyone taking that fight to the Department of Justice? It seems to me like the use of disparate impact is you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent.
Yeah, so
in that situation, somebody needs to fight that, it seems like.
Yeah, so Joe, here's the challenge. The final disparate impact rule is in final rulemaking out of HUD, not out of FHA, but of the Federal Housing Enforcement Office. And so that rule's coming into play. And that rule, if it goes out as it's proposed, would say, hey, it doesn't matter whether you complied with all your underwriting standards. If you ultimately your decisions created a disparate impact, meaning protected classes were declined at a higher rate than non-protected classes, even if you originated to the same standards across the board, you could be in violation of disparate impact. And at the same time, the QM rule that's coming out is saying, hey, we don't care about disparate impact. We want you to do only safe and sound mortgages that have a proven quote ability to repay unquote. So if that rule comes out too narrow and it would cause a disparate impact, but it violates the HUD rule on disparate impact, who's to say that the Southern District of New York or some
exactly.
federal prosecutor isn't going to file charges against the institution? I think the greatest risk is to the larger institutions in this case, but I do think it's something we need to focus on. We're calling for at the MBA, and I've sent a letter to Secretaries Geithner and Donovan and to Gene Sperling, who heads the National Economic Council. We've called on them to create a national policy coordinator, not a bureaucracy level, as some might accuse, that would slow things down. Just someone to get all these regulators in the room and say, hey, guys, what you're doing over there conflicts directly with the thing that's coming out of the Fed or CFPB or Department of Labor or the FTC. Or we have 9 regulators regulating in the mortgage space right now. It's mass confusion, and this is just a classic example of two different
right.
federal regulators creating policy that completely disagrees with the other one. And that's what we need. We need to create at minimum coordination. I think DOJ is going to be a challenge. They're going to prosecute violators of the laws, and the laws will come out of these regulators. And that's why we got to focus on the regulator. We can't ask the DOJ to make law because they don't do that.
I'm looking at the clock here. Alice, did you have something?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, and the problem with a lot of that is right now it's new data for lenders because they haven't been in that space to get analyzed at that level for disparate impact. And you get software, you start analyzing your pipeline, you realize I have this unintended consequence. I did, like you said, I followed everything the same. Now I have 2 loans, 10 loans. What are the benchmarks that they're supposed to be using? There's no precedent set for them other than how it's been handled for banks.
Right.
So there's a lot of unanswered questions with, I can analyze all I want, but then what? How do I do that? How do I undo a problem when the water's already over the dam?
Yeah, and I think providing consultation services, particularly to independent mortgage bankers, which haven't been exposed to this kind of regulation before, now that they are being regulated by the CFPB, is really important. And there are, you know, we did a webinar just on how to prepare for a CFPB audit, and it was huge attendance at the webinar. And I think, you know, you all can play this role because you all provide consultation services, but we need to find a way to particularly focus on the small businesses in our industry to make sure that they can survive through this time frame because they're critical. We need a much more diversified mortgage industry. It's way too concentrated today, which everybody would acknowledge. And we're not going to do that if we can't create pathways for institutions to compete in America. And that's really what we need to focus on.
I really like what you're talking about, David, when it comes about bringing consolidation amongst the various interests within our industry. We've been too fragmented, and I want to hear again what industry professionals can do to make a difference. Really, as we get looking at the clock, we have just a few moments left in this, a couple minutes left in this broadcast. What would you, as the leader of our industry, Mortgage Bankers Association of America, playing the leadership role, what would you recommend the top three things we'd be doing, or the top number of things?
So, look, I'm a guy who started as a loan rep. I've been in this industry my whole life, like everybody's listening to this thing, and I just happen to fall into this seat, quite frankly. And I'm proud to be here to fight for our industry. But number one, you got to join, man. I mean, I travel around the country, and David, you and I spoke about this wherever we were.
In Chicago.
But it was, you know, you can't complain and then refuse to join the organization. It's a tax, and there's nobody fighting for it. And look, after me, there'll be someone else in this seat. But we have the war going right now. You got to pay the tax and participate because that just makes us stronger. That's one. Two is you can't know every issue, but you got to know what's immediate, what's imminent, and we can help you with that. And so I always encourage every member to join our calls. We do an independent mortgage bankers call once a week, every week, and we go through what the hot policy issues are.
Wow.
That's a great way to join. It's open to anybody who wants to. Just send me a note at my email address. I'll get you on the calls if you haven't received the invitations. And you can keep abreast of what's going on. And third, call your congressman, senator, or member of the House. They actually do listen. You have huge influence, much greater than you think. Even if you're some, you know, loan processor sitting in Topeka, Kansas, and you think your voice doesn't matter, actually it really matters. And the more you exercise that, the greater the influence you have. Today, Washington's governing our world, and it's not Wall Street. It's not New York. It's D.C., and that's really my reason why I ended up staying in Washington, although I was headed back to the industry for a while, is it just became very clear that no one's here who can articulate and fight the fight like this institution can. And, you know, we're a nonprofit. We only do it with everybody in the nation participating together in this fight. And you need to join your state MBA, too, because the state MBAs are fighting the fight in their own states. They can't deal with Washington, and I can't deal with issues that are occurring in selective states across the country. This is a teamwork effort where we support each other both federally and locally. And, you know, it's part of running a business today.
It is. I mean, that's so well said. I think that, first of all, David, we want to say thank you for the leadership you brought to our industry. I'm so grateful, as many, many were not only grateful, but relieved at the decision to stay here at the MBA for a period of time. We appreciate so much you taking a few minutes out of your busy day to join us on this broadcast. And I just hope that so many people will download this and share it across the industry. It's such an important message. And David, I would like to invite you to come back anytime you see something that you want to get out. So all the, who knows what the listener base will be by the time you come back, but it's growing rapidly. We'd love to have you back. Would you love to come back and be a part of this again?
Anytime. You guys are all key leaders in our industry, and I hope you keep growing your listener base because you're critically important to communicating points of importance to our industry. So anytime I can join.
We'd love to have you back again.
Hey, one last thing.
Yes.
The Mortgage Action Alliance. It's free.
Yes,
it allows us to reach out to everybody who's listening. You're not going to. It doesn't cost you a penny. You don't even have to join the MBA. Just join the Mortgage Action Alliance. You can do it online. Dave, you know how to get a hold of it as well.
Yep.
If you would just register there when there's something going on in Washington that's urgent, we'll get a hold of you, and you can make your calls.
I can't encourage that enough, listeners. Get involved. Go to the MBA website or just put Mortgage Action Alliance. I've Googled it several times when I've passed it on to clients. It's so important. Folks, we'll be back next week again with the broadcast. It is going to be Christmas Eve, and we will be back as well as New Year's Eve. Stay tuned. Also, I'll be on CNBC today with Maria Bartiromo, 4:20 Eastern Time, talking about the housing industry. Tune into that. Love to get your feedback. David, thank you so much for being a part of the broadcast and all that you're doing in the industry. Folks, we'll look forward to hearing from you, and stay tuned throughout the holidays, and we'll be back with you. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year to all of you.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.